We are back. We are cozy, and we are here for the Parish of the Patriots 183 times now. This is the 183rd episode. I'm glad to be here. Hopefully you're glad to be here. However you came to be here, whether you're a longtime listener, member of the congregation, or it's your first time tuning in, whatever, I'm glad you're here. Hopefully you get something out of the show. If you are a new listener, we do have a Christian-specific segment. See, there's more to the name than just a name. We do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly at the halfway point of the show. You may think you don't want to tune in for it, but trust me, you probably do. I think you do. This show, and you know, likewise, just like any other congregation, we do pass around the offering plate. I do ask for your voluntary support. If you get something out of the show, put something in the plate. It is very much appreciated. It's also really, really easy. You slow scroll down through the description page, which pretty much nobody reads. You'll find we have snail mail. Right below that, you'll see we got a Bitcoin address. We got a Monero address, an email down there to drop your notes. And if you happen to have a different cryptocurrency, drop me an email. I can more than likely get you an address for that. So without further ado, that means it's listener supporter mailbag time. It won't take long to go through. GPD, great work. Great work you do for us and for the Lord. That's from Mr. T, one of our weekly supporters. And as always, it is very much appreciated. And it is for sure a labor. It's a labor of love. I do enjoy doing the show. I do enjoy these discussions. Next up, dear Grandpa Dan, I'm sorry to hear about your diagnosis. I'm glad to hear you're recovering. I hope you keep getting better. God is with you. Sincerely, David. There's a whole lot more here. And, I just say specifically, to David here, I really appreciate it. I'm not reading in the rest of your testimony online because I'm so humbled by it. I'm just overwhelmed. I just pray God for the testimony you've shared, and I'm not sharing it online. I'm not sharing it on the show just because I'm afraid it would come off like, you know, I don't know, like tooting my own horn, as they say, you know, like trying to glorify myself, like, oh, I'm so great, you know, and that's, I think, would be missing the point. I've read through this, and I'm just really, really humbled, and I just really thank you. I thank you for the picture. It's going to be hung up here. This artwork is going to be hung up in the prestigious studios right here. Namely, that's my bedroom, by the way. We podcast on a budget here at Radio Albion, but no, seriously, I do. I really appreciate what you shared, and again, I really am humbled by it, and I thank you. Thank you very, very much. And that gets us through the listener supporter mailbag. See, I told you it wouldn't take long, and again, it is very much appreciated, and it does help. It makes a huge difference, both moral support and, of course, the financial support. Financial support, talking about financial support, the government needs more financial support. You know, one of the big things going on this past week is, you know, this news that they're hiring 87,000. I was sitting here getting ready. I had jotted this down. So I'm going to talk about these IRS agents. They're going to hire all these IRS agents. And I couldn't remember the exact number. So I pull it up. I whip my phone out here and I pull it up to see, you know, and what do I get? I get a bunch of debunking, fact checking, you know. There's an online conspiracy theory that they're hiring these IRS agents to go after people to take their money. It's been debunked. You see, they're going to do clerical work and customer service. Sure they are. Sure, we've seen their training videos. That's why they said on there that you got to be willing to carry, you got to be able to carry a firearm and be willing to use deadly force, because you see, they're going to be giving customer service. Customer service is going to be at the end of a barrel of a gun. 87,000 new agents. I think that the FBI total has in total like 30,000. So that tells you something. One of the things amazing about this is seeing the shills, you know, the shills that always think none of this is going to apply to them. See the shills and they're like, you know, oh, you know, this is just going to be to go after like the rich people. They got 87,000 guys go after rich people. This all makes sense when you think, remember the story when they were wanting to know like about that $600 you got in your bank account? You know, it's like, you know, your grandmama gave you like, you know, a gift, you know, like she cashed some money out of her pension and gave it to you, you know, to help you out because you're in college or something, you know, government wants to know about that. I can't believe that there are people out there, namely shitlibs, that are so deluded. They still think that the government is going to, like, go after the rich people. They're going to go after their bosses. I always explain this when people have this, like, illusion. Oh, yes, the Biden people, all these Team D. I root for Team D because Team D is going after the rich. Look, when you go back to your shitty job at Starbucks, I shouldn't put that up. Work is work. When you go back to your job at Starbucks, they're lefty. Are you going to go in there, you know, and reprimand, do a written reprimand to your boss, to their manager? Well, no, that's backwards, isn't it? You see, that's what you're claiming Team D or Team R, whoever it is going to do when they come up with this nonsense of they're going to crack down on these these billionaire tax evaders that are putting their money on offshore accounts. It was so laughable at the time because it's like, oh, these billionaires are putting, you know, all their money in offshore accounts and the government isn't getting it. So as a result, we want to know about that $600 you got. Where did the $600? There's a training video for this IRS thing going around, and like their whole scenario was, you know, they're taking down a guy running a landscaping. They're not even pretending. They're trying to make it realistic. I make that training realistic. They're taking down some white landscaper. White landscaper guy, because I don't know, he bought some lawnmowers with some money he didn't report or something. There's only like, what, there's not like this huge number of super ultra wealthy people. I mean, there's just not. They don't need 87,000 guys. I saw somebody pointing out, or several people pointing out on the internet, you know, years ago when Obama talked about having a domestic, you know, military force, you know, like equivalent to the military type force only for civilians. Raised a few eyebrows at the time. Somebody pointed out, well, maybe this is it. You know, see, their goals don't ever change. This sort of thing is about intimidation. It's not necessarily, even with their 87,000 guys, it's not even necessarily they're going to come after you. They just want you to know the threat is there. That's the way they did it back in the old Soviet Union. You know, they had all these, you know, KGB, and they had different names in different Eastern Bloc countries. But they had their KGB type of people. And of course, obviously it wasn't possible to have somebody like spying on someone, you know, on every single person all the time. But you see, they would make highly public arrests. They'd make examples of people. And that's what they do here. It's the same playbook. Even with 87,000 agents, you've got millions and millions of people in this country. You know, they can't like go after everybody. So what they're going to do is high profile, make examples of. No doubt it's going to be political dissidents, people that disagree with the government. And that's how it'll be. The tax code is the easiest thing for them to use. Once again, just like the old Soviet Union, there were so many laws on the books that they could find something. You know, they could find something if they decided to round you up. I mean, there's so many laws. Everybody was breaking some law. They could find a law that you broke. And the tax code here is the equivalent to that. It's no different. You fill, I don't know, a stadium with the paperwork of the tax code. It's so complicated. I don't care how good your CPA is. I don't know how good of an accounting firm you hire. They don't even know all the tax laws. It's not possible. There's too many. And it's by design. People always see that and they act like, you know, oh, well, you know, like, oh, the government just passed this bill. And look, they haven't even read it because it takes up so much paper and fill a room. And they act like this is some sort of goofy incompetence on the part of these politicians, on the part of these lobbyists that actually write the paperwork out. They act like it's some kind of gross incompetence. Look how stupid these politicians are. No, that's part of the design. It's part of the plan. You got to get enough stuff in there where if you want to go after somebody, you can find something. It's like nothing changes. Is it legal to pay taxes under Caesar? It's the same thing. If they want to come after you that way, they can find something. Oh, you pulled the mattress tag off. You pulled the tag off this mattress. Rent around you up. You violated federal law. I mean, there's so many laws on the books, and especially when you look at the tax code. They can find something. Don't worry. And they can make a public example. And then everybody else is like, man, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. I better keep my head down. I better just pay some extra. You see, it's not even so much the money, because they're so far in debt. Look, the government is so far in debt and so far underwater. At this point, nobody should even be paying any taxes. We rephrase that, because it could be... No, I'm not saying don't pay your taxes. Believe me, that's not what I'm saying. That will put you on the radar. I'm saying they could just simply say, we're not going to make anybody pay any taxes, because it doesn't matter. It's like being so far in debt. Like, say you got a $50,000 a year job, but yet you're paying out $80,000 a year in debt. And then you're at your work and you get a $2 raise and you're excited about that. It ain't going to make no difference. You're so far underwater. Look, you're bankrupt. That's how the government is. The money is the point here is the money's not even the point. 87,000 people, they're going to try to collect all this money from it. Look, that's just a side note. That's irrelevant. What they're purchasing with the 87,000 new IRS agents is intimidation. People act like it was a mistake, like, oh, they didn't mean to let it slip, that part about these agents, you need to be armed and willing to use deadly force. Because, see, then when people were pointing it out, they took it down and fixed that part. And, you know, so, and see, they were caught and they were embarrassed. No, that was on purpose. They don't care about the money. The point is the intimidation. That's what they're buying with the 87,000 agents. They put that out there with the got to be willing to use deadly force and carry a gun. That was not incompetence. It was not an accident. What they're buying is intimidation. The economy is in the middle of collapsing and it's not on the road to recovery. Not by a long shot. People are going to be getting really, really restless as things get really, really worse. They're trying to get the intimidation in early. They're trying to get it set in people's minds. You better keep your head down. Better keep your mouth shut. We're hiring 87,000. We're hiring an army of armed people that can come after you at any time we want them to. And again, you got to laugh. You got to laugh at the rank and file, the low level, just a rank and file average Twitter, Reddit shill that will turn a blind eye to this and justify it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, they do this because they think it won't apply to them. This is they're just going to use this against the Trump tards. And it's funny because in so doing, they're admitting that this is all politically motivated, by the way. Yeah, they're admitting that. But they think somehow none of this is going to apply to them. Like the intimidation isn't going to apply to them. Look, like, for instance, the Antifa people, the BLM riots that we had several years ago, they got emboldened. You see, they think, you know, because the government allowed it and thus supported it, they refused to basically, you know, put anybody in prison for it. Yeah, some people got arrested and they turned around and let them right back out. And this gave them this false impression that they have immunity. You know, they think that, you know, because of things like that, these rank and file shills think that means none of this applies to them. You see, no, the government's guns will never be pointed towards them. Let me tell you what, the Antifa BLM stuff from a couple years ago. Yeah, the government promoted and, you know, supported that. Because and you can't deny that they promoted and supported it when you had all these prominent politicians going out in public and taking a knee in solidarity with what they were doing. I mean, they were observably promoting and supporting this happening. Let me tell you, average shitlib shill that thinks that means you have free reign. You see, those riots were supported because they were aimed at average white people. They were aimed at average regular people. You see, that's all well and good. If those right, the minute you turn around, if you have the same people, if you have, say, the Antifa people, and they start trying to throw a riot and burn buildings down, not in the name of we hate white people, but in the name of we're angry because the economy is collapsing, our lives all suck, and this government is illegitimate. Trust me, you're not going to get treated like a couple of years ago. You're going to find out really, really quick that all of this nonsense about, oh, we're different from third world countries, is just that. They will gun you down and say it was in the name of our democracy, our values, and who we are, whatever other gibberish. The media will report that. And you're going to be there gasping around going, I thought this was just going to be for, you know, MAGOTs or Trump tards or whatever. I just thought it was going to be for the other guys. Trust me, it will be for you the minute you step out of line. It doesn't matter. You think you're in a protected group. Whatever that. You're a feminist? Black? I don't know. Homosexual? Transgender? Whatever. You think you're in a protected group. Once you stand up and say opposing the government, opposing the agenda. You see, you're a protected group as long as you're useful to the narrative, as long as you're useful to the agenda. The minute that stops, and heaven forbid, the minute that you think you're going to stand up and disagree with the narrative, with the agenda, with the government, you're going to find out really quick you're not in a protected group. That was just gibberish. That was just PR. That was just marketing. It was just publicity. You were just a useful tool. I think there's a reason they have these outlandish things. You know, I mean, they promote these things in the schools, for instance. We hear about these books, for instance, in these libraries, and people get outraged. And we have all this story about trying to turn little kids into transgenders and all those. And they do it on purpose. You see, they sit there and say the transgender community right now is a protected community. You're not allowed to criticize them. And they make a big public display of dragging people through the mud because they said something that was transphobic. You see, if you think you're in a protected group, they're purposely getting the public's ire against you because that's leverage. If you say a member of the transgender community and you step up and you step out of line and say, well, I don't think the government's doing, I think our economy's collapsing. And I don't think the Ukraine is a really good excuse of why we're going through that. We're going to find out real quick. They're leveraging this public anger and reaction. I've said for a long time on these things, we do Daily Nationalist on Fridays, and I have a joke with Sven that, you know, I call it the Daily Transitionalist because it seems like so often we're doing these transgender stories. But so oftentimes I've said, and I'll repeat it right here, these people are just being used as a tool. These people, I mean, they put these stories out here and you see these stories and it makes you angry. That's part of what they want. This is leverage. If this community steps out of line and the government says, the homosexual community, the transgender community, whatever the case, if you had a group of these people say, step out of line and denounce the narrative and start complaining about the government, and then all of a sudden they turn around and crack down on them. All this public anger, you think anybody's going to want to stand up and say, hey, wait, you can't do that to those people? No. In other words, generating this anger with these stories, you know, when you see it, when you do the umpteenth drag queen story hour story and it makes you mad, you have to temper that with the understanding that that story's out there for a reason. They want you to be angry about it. And look, I'm not saying that your anger is wrong or misplaced, but just understand. In other words, it's fine to realize, you know, look at these things and say these are wrong. But you never want to let these things get to the point where they can be used to manipulate you. You don't want to ever throw your reason out the window. We talk about these shootings, you know, and we see these shootings and people will say, you know, well, you know, how come this person was, for instance, you know, they were in contact with a federal agent on the internet or whatever the case may be. Look, you can't be manipulated. You always want to be in a position where you can't be manipulated. Unstable people get manipulated because they're emotionally unstable. It's fine to be angry. It's fine to be outraged about things. There's nothing wrong with righteous outrage and righteous anger. But you always want to keep your reason. If it's handy to throw the, I'm just using the transgender thing because that's the thing right now. If it at any moment becomes handy to toss the transgender community to the wolves to get the heat off themselves, they will do that. There is no, oh, they really believe. They don't believe in any of this. These people are only tools. They're only tools. They're only useful for the agenda right now. And that's why they're using them. again, there's a reason these stories are out in the media and you get outraged about them. You know, they could just black it out. They just censor everything out, black it out, don't let you talk about anything. And they do that to a certain extent, but understand that what is out there, look, they're willing to use that. That's leverage to make sure these folks don't get out of line. I don't know. Maybe seeing some of the stuff, you know, recognizing this stuff comes with age, you know? It really does. Like, for instance, I mean, back in the day, you know, I wasn't near as far along in political theory and understanding as I am now. Not to bragging, but I mean, it's just truth. And even at that point in time, when they passed the Patriot Act, you know, I could see then, as well as many others could see then, is like, yeah, this is, I don't think, going to eventually, long term, just be used against the Muslims. Here's a perfect example. I remember when they ordered the drone strike and killed the Muslim and his son that was an American citizen. No trial, no arrest. They just executed him without warrant, without trial. And on paper, you know, whether you agree with it or not, on paper, the man was an American citizen. And his son, you know, because they said, well, he was encouraging the terrorism. There's one of those turning moments, you know, one of those pivotal moments that is stuck in my mind. And to put the cherry on top, they executed his son, too, who they weren't even claiming was a part of promoting terrorism. I guess he was just guilty because he was related to the guy. But if the citizenship, I think, I'm not preaching early, but I think of like when the Apostle Paul got drug off, they put him in prison and they beat him. And then the next day they were like, well, we'll let you go. And Paul was like, really? You're just going to let me go? Well, yeah, I'm a Roman citizen. And then everybody proceeded to crap their pants and started kissing his ass. And we're like, you know, we're sorry. We'll get you, escort you out of town. And, you know, let's just let this go. Because at that time, Roman citizenship was a big deal. Apparently, American citizenship is not. You're supposed to be protected by the rule of law, we're told. But this guy, again, regardless of your feelings, and sometimes you got to put this aside. I mean, you sit there and say, you look at these stories and they're invading Europe and they bring in all these Muslims in. And you, that's fine. And that's a valid thing to complain about. But it's so easy to miss the point. The point is, regardless of your feelings about Muslims being U.S. citizens, regardless of your personal feelings, the man was a U.S. citizen. And he didn't, none of this nonsense they tell you, these rights they tell you you have. Do you think they can't take their political opposition right now, swoop you up and disappear you in a CIA black prison somewhere if they want to? You think they didn't sit there and talk about your rights and your lawyers? They hit the guy with a missile and executed him without even taking him to trial just because they said, well, he's promoting the terrorism. The point is, they use this. They sit there and talk about Islamophobia and they lecture you. They want to piss you off. There's a reason they'll sit there and on the one hand, let you get stoked up and angry by bringing like Muslims. You see these stories. Oh, all these Muslims are coming in. Bring all these Muslims in. Oh, look, here's a story to be outraged about the Muslims. It all works out. If they bring up a bill like the Patriot Act and says, and all they got to do then is convince you, well, we're going to use it against the Muslims. And you're all sitting there, you're waving your U.S. hand flags going, yeah, USA, we're going to kick it to them Muslims. But that's not even the target. You see, your outrage, your anger gets directed to where it actually supports what they want. You're supporting your own demise. People out there waving their flags after 9/11 and they passed the Patriot Act. They're waving their flags, you know, because they're passing the Patriot Act because they're going to do all this and crack down on these dang Muslims. They're going to allow torture now. We're going to be okay with torture, but it's okay. It's going to be used against them Muslims. Because they can't do it to me. I'm a U.S. citizen, right? I think we've already covered that. And again, likewise, it's funny because these shills, these rank and file Twitter and Reddit type shills that support this, they too, they foolishly think these things the government's promoting and these powers that those who run the government are promoting will only be used against Team R, against Trump tards or maggots or whatever slurs they make up to demonize the people they don't like, the people they disagree with. They think it's okay because that's only going to get used against them. These 87,000 IRS agents aren't going to be used against me if I step out of line. No, they're only going to get used against the people I don't like. And you see, in that way, people get emotionally manipulated to support their own demise. You see it time and time again. And it works. It works time and time again. I don't know if people get all caught up like trying to find vast conspiracies that the government, you know, like these complicated plans, you know, and the government, the World Economic Forum, all these people, you know, the globalists, the elites, they have these big, intricate, complicated plans. And I mean, I guess to a certain extent they might, but you know, really their playbook is pretty open. And honestly, why do they need to change it? Because it works pretty good. They just keep doing the same thing. They just keep saying the same lies, using the same emotional manipulation, and the people keep falling for it over and over again. Why try something new, right? As the old saying goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it works, hell, just keep doing it. Why come up with a new way, a new, more complicated way to accomplish something if what you're doing works? And it does. We have less freedom today than we've ever had. We're lied to more today than we ever have been. They can manipulate public opinion to pretty much go along with whatever they want it to. Now, they're heading into dangerous territory because that is facilitated by the perception of relative economic prosperity. And I've said that for some time, that they get away with a lot of stuff they do in this country because people have this perception of relative economic prosperity. And once you remove that factor, and that's happening, that is happening in real time right now. If anybody thinks, and I've talked to people that think that, you know, this is just another blip in the history of America. Like this economic downturn, as it were, is like a temporary thing and everything's going to turn around and go back to the way it was. I don't view it that way. I view this as, you know, yet the latest sign of the collapsing empire. But they're able to maintain, the point is they're able to maintain this control because of the perception of relative economic prosperity. Once they lose that, I mean, it gets really hard. It's going to get more difficult for them to maintain the level of control, the level of obedience. Because obedience doesn't mean people have to be in the streets supporting what they're doing. It just means that people have to not actively oppose it. So they're able to do that because people feel like they're doing pretty good. They got a decent house. They got a decent car. They're hoping for a promotion at work, whatever the case may be. And so they don't personally feel a need to rock the boat. But the economy's swirling down the toilet. It's a big turd swirling around in the toilet right now. I don't know how well they're going to be able to maintain control as they lose this perception of relative economic prosperity. I think we're going to find out. I think we're going to find out in the very near future as things keep going downhill. You know, macro statistics, as they share with you, you know, they can sit there. So, for instance, they can sit here and say unemployment is zero, you know, 0.1% unemployment, and that 0.1% is lazy. That don't mean anything to you if you're a guy who doesn't have a job and everybody you know doesn't have a job. I mean, they lie, and that only works so far as because people are going to, what means something to people is their own personal experience. He can sit there. They can sit there and say the economy's doing great. But the more people say, well, it ain't doing great for me. So what they're saying on TV and what their trumped up statistics say means less and less. Now, if they feel like those around them are doing okay, see, that's the trick. You know, somebody say the media comes out and basically says the economy's booming. And if it's not booming for you, it's because you're stupid. You know, you're just a loser. They don't put it exactly that way, but trust me, that's the message they're giving you. And if you look around and it seems like, well, everybody else does seem to be doing all right, it must just be me, then they can maintain a certain amount of control like that. But when you look around, it's like, no, everybody around me is also poor. And that's where we're headed. Then all of a sudden, that doesn't carry any water. It doesn't mean anything. In other words, I think they're way overestimating their ability to bullshit everybody through the circumstances. How it turns out, if that does all go south and they start losing, they start seeing their ability to control the situation, to control the masses, start to slip away. I don't know. I think it's awful handy that they're going to have all of these groups that they've been letting public outrage get directed towards. Drag queens, homosexuals, transgenders, they can use that. They have an incident. Vent some of that public anger away from the regime, away from the government. Let it be directed towards the transgender people, towards the drag queens, towards the homosexuals. Again, trust me, these people being protected group, that's just a matter of practicality, as long as they're useful. If it becomes useful to direct public ire away from the government, away from the system, that's a better term to use here, the system, and direct it towards one of these are sacrificial. I guess what I'm trying to say is these groups are sacrificial pawns. They will sacrifice those pawns. There's no problem. They will toss them under the bus and feed them to the angry mob if it means the angry mob isn't going to eat them. If it means they can get the angry mob to buy into this system of enslavement just a little bit longer. While they funnel some more, you know, while they strip mine a little more out of the economy and put some more money offshore because there ain't no way the 87,000 IRS agents are looking for that. Anyway, yeah, you know, that whole thing was part of this, you know, bill. I don't know. You want to know what they're doing? Like, look at these bills they pass, and it's always like the opposite. You know, like the Patriot Act, it was like the opposite of anything to do with patriotism. This is like, I remember like the Inflation Fighting Act of 2022. They're going to fight inflation by creating even more money. And of course, like I say, it's always these vague things. You know, we're going to put this many billions of dollars into green energy. And nobody ever knows where that money goes. You know, they don't. Nobody ever knows. The money just disappears. Umpteen $1 trillion have been spent on infrastructure bills, different plans, infrastructure bills. The roads still suck. It's not a coincidence. Nobody knows where the money goes. That's without even getting into the Pentagon budget, the CIA budget, any of these spy agency budgets. Nobody knows where that money goes. It all just goes. It just poof. There's no accounting. It just all manages to go into the correct pockets. That's how you wind up with these super rich people. That's how you wind up with Congress people who, like, they elected to Congress, like, and they have, you know, a little bit of money in their bank account, and then like 4 years later, they're rich. Suddenly they became, you know, before, you know, they didn't have that much money, but see, after 4 years in Congress, they magically made just excellent stock guesses. They bought and sold at just the perfect time because they're smart. And now they're rich. Just pure coincidence. Don't question it. I do. I find it funny, though, that people like who unironically still cheer for Team D or Team R, you know, even though regardless of what side of the normally political spectrum you're on, you know, nothing ever changes in the big picture. Nothing really seems to ever change. Everything keeps going in the same direction. I don't know. It's funny. It's the system. The system is working as planned. I do. I find it funny when people like act like there's something wrong. You know, there's something wrong. The system is failing. It's not doing what it's supposed to do. But I would argue that it is doing exactly what the system is designed to do. I've said this before, and we got to get into the Christian specific segment, so I need to wrap this up. But I've said this before, but like under a dictatorship, a monarchy, which is honestly a dictatorship is just a monarchy by another name. Under a monarchy, if things go south, you got one guy to blame. You know whose fault it is. It's his fault. I mean, it doesn't matter that he has people that work under him that maybe are screwing things up. The buck stops there. He's the guy. See, under this system, it's the opposite of that. It's purposely designed to where you don't know who to blame. You got all these Congress people, you got all these senators, you got the president, but then you have this massive army of, I have no idea how many bureaucrats, government employees. I mean, the blame is spread so thin, you don't know who to blame. You know, you don't know who to blame. And it's purposely designed that way. It's like I say, it's a feature. It's not a bug. We need to get into the Christian specific segment before it gets any later here. So like I say, if you're new, and I recommend hanging out for it. I think it's worth the listen. Maybe you'll get something out of it. We'll see. But it is our Christian specific segment for those who are Christian believers. So, you know, that's why we put it in its own special little section. So, yeah, without further ado, as I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So this week, I want to talk about screwing things up because I have a lot of experience screwing things up. And no doubt, maybe y'all do as well. No, seriously, and sometimes when we screw things up, we do so even though we have the best of intentions. I thought we'd talk a little bit this week about, we'd look at Peter's denial of Christ when Jesus is arrested. And we're going to, I've got to kind of skip around to get to the points that we want without boring you to death sitting here just reading and reading. So we're going to look in the book of Mark, chapter 14. We're going to start off with verses 27 through 31. And Jesus said unto them, all ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. But after that I am risen, I will go before you into Galilee. But Peter said unto him, although all shall be offended, yet will not I. And Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto thee, that this day, even in this night, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. That's kind of a tongue twister. I'm going to mess that up. Before this is all done, no doubt. But he spake the more vehemently, if I should die with thee, I will not deny thee in any wise. Likewise also said they all. There's already kind of a lot to unpack here. First off, you got to appreciate Peter and even the other apostles. You've got to appreciate their zealousness. And a lot of times, I think, like such as example here with Peter, we screw things up when we kind of get ahead of ourselves. Now, Peter, we're focusing on Peter here. He had, of course, been with Jesus. He had witnessed all these countless miracles. And Jesus has just told him this is going to happen. But because Jesus is pointing out, he's highlighting a failure on Peter's part, he can't accept that. I mean, we look at him, we say, wow, Peter was really, he was at least zealous. He meant well. And he did. He meant well. But it went over his head that he's standing here arguing with the Son of God. He has seen Jesus go around, raise Lazarus from the dead, heal the sick, cause the blind to see, cause the deaf to hear, cast out unclean spirits and cleansed people's spirits so that they were no longer afflicted with whatever ailed them. And yet, now he's standing here because Jesus says, look, this is what you're fixing to do. This is what's going to happen because the scripture has to be fulfilled. Jesus is saying, this is even bigger than me in the sense that this is the word that has been spoken and it's got to be fulfilled. This is the Father's will. This has been written out and this part has to be fulfilled. But because it's pointing out what is perceived by Peter and ultimately the others as a failure on their part. No, no, Lord. Peter says no. Even if everybody else, now everybody else might do this, but not going to be me, Lord. Even if I got to go with you, I'm going to be by your side all the way to death. It amazes me that Peter's missing the point. And now he's arguing with the Son of God. He's seen Jesus do these things. And instead of just being like, oh, wow, you know, I've still got a long way to go. No, Lord. No, he's arguing with Jesus Christ that, no, I'm not going to forsake you. I'm going to stick with you. And Jesus is just basically, his response is to have a shake his head moment. You notice Jesus doesn't argue with him either, but he simply points out, like, dude, before this evening is done, before you hear the cock crow, you're going to deny me three times. Before you hear the cock crow twice, you're going to deny me three times. Just this very night, you're all hyped now. You're all enthusiastic now. But before this night's over, that enthusiasm, because it wasn't from God, it was from Peter himself, is just going to evaporate. When push comes to shove, it's going to vaporize. Now, again, he had the best of intentions, and I'm sure he wasn't like, you know, he wasn't fronting. You know, he meant what he was saying. But you see, he was getting ahead of himself, and we'll get into that part of it in a minute. I want to go ahead and finish our Bible reading. We're going to stay in Mark. We're going to stay in chapter 14. We're going to fast forward to verses 66 through 72 so we can go ahead and finish out what happens. We're skipping the stuff in the middle. But Jesus has been arrested at this point. The FBI at that time has swooped in. They sent the SWAT team. And Jesus is like, I'm not reading that part, but it's like, Jesus is like, I've been walking around the temple. I've been like among the people. I've been preaching this gospel. Y'all could have come up to me at any time, but instead you do what? You send an FBI SWAT team to raid me right here. You got all these armed people and they didn't have guns, obviously. So they're pointing their spears and their swords as they like walking around. But what do y'all do? I've been walking around among the people. I've been preaching among the people. I've been talking among the people. But you can walk up to me anytime. And what do y'all do? Y'all wait till the middle of the night. He was outside, so they couldn't kick in the door. I'm walking around, and they come in the middle of the night. They swoop in with all these armed guards pointing swords and spears like he's a dangerous man. And he's like, hey, y'all. Y'all could just walked up to me at any time, but y'all going to do an FBI SWAT raid on me here in the middle of the night. But anyway, Jesus has been arrested, and the Inquisition and the torture is just beginning on Jesus' end. But our focus today is on, of course, Peter. So again, we're staying in Mark 14. We're fast forwarding. We're going to go 66 through 72, which will take us to the end of the chapter. So Peter has followed Jesus in, you know, from afar. Now you see, he's already slipped. He was saying, I'm going to stay with you by your side all the way to the end. But see, when the FBI SWAT raided him, everybody took off. They said there was one guy there. He didn't have no clothes on. He just had a blanket wrapped around him walking along. And like he took off and they were grabbing the blanket and it whipped off. He just ran off naked. They all took off running. It's just. A short time ago, Peter was saying, I'll stick with you to the end, but Peter doesn't, he ghosted out too. But you see, now he's all following from afar. He kind of like, okay, I'll follow from back here and see what's going to happen. So he slips into the compound. He slipped into the FBI field office to see what they're going to do to Jesus. He's like doing a surveillance or something. See, he's already missed the whole thing where he was going to stay by Jesus' side. He could have run up and told him, hey, you're taking him, you're taking me too. What you going to do? He didn't do that. So see, he's already slipped, but he's trying to justify it in his mind. He's following from afar. I'll chill out back here and see what happens. See, he's basically in denial that already what Jesus said he was going to do, he has done. He said everybody would be, the shepherd would be struck and the flock would scatter. This has already happened, but instead of accepting this, he's trying to justify it. He's, well, I'm really scared. You see, I'm following from behind. I got a plan here. I don't know what that plan is. But I'm gonna see what happens. And as Peter was beneath in the palace, there cometh one of the maids of the high priest. And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, "Hey, thou also was with Jesus of Nazareth." But he denied, saying, "I know not, neither understand I what thou sayest." And he went out onto the porch, and the cock crew. So yeah, this random woman walks up and she's like, "Hey, I seen you out there hanging out with him one day. I was walking through town." And so, I don't know nothing about that. That ain't even my savior. I don't know. Now we're going to continue. And another maid saw him again and began to say to them that stood by. He's telling everybody around him now. "This is one of them." Somebody else saw it. Remember, Jesus was very public and the apostles were there hanging out. And Peter's trying to be all like sneaky. And everybody's like, "Hey, we all seen you out there." And he denied it again. And a little after, they that stood by said again to Peter, "Surely thou art one of them, for thou art a Galilean, and thy speech agreeth thereto." So you got the accent. Yeah, obviously you are. You keep saying you're not part of, but I mean, you talk and sound like all the rest of them guys. "But he began to curse and to swear." Now, understand, this isn't profanity. He's swearing and cursing, which is a different thing. It's like calling curses down on yourself and swearing. No, absolutely swearing. They didn't have any part. That's not just a light denial now. Now we're talking, he's actually stepped into the sin part where he is swearing, which is a huge deal here, saying, "I know not this man of whom ye speak." Not just saying it. He's already done that twice. Now he's called curses down and has sworn. So he's given a false testimony before these people and swearing. It doesn't say who he swore by or how he swore, but he swore that he knew not this man that vehemently. And the second time the cock crew, and Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said unto him, "Before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice." And when he thought thereon, he wept. Now, when Jesus had first warned them about, you know, what was going to happen about this, you know, he also told them, you know, "After I've risen, I'll meet you down the road and we'll get this all ironed out," which does, of course, eventually happen. We're going to read that part because we're kind of focusing on this. But, you know, Jesus, after he's risen, you know, he basically reinstates Peter. He forgives him of the denial, and he basically outlines for him, because we do know with hindsight that Peter did indeed follow Jesus to death. It just wasn't at that time. See, Peter's enthusiasm wasn't misplaced. He just got ahead of himself. He was going to follow Jesus even unto death, but not right at that moment. You see, he was so caught up in the idea, and he was right, but he had the timing all wrong. He did follow Jesus unto death, but just not right then. And he failed to grasp, you know, this was all a part of God's plan. Let's say, for instance, Peter had followed Jesus. Let's just say he didn't. He did. He stayed with Jesus and wound up being executed alongside of him. That wouldn't have fit into God's plan that Peter was to establish the church. Jesus said, "You're the rock on which I'm going to, you know, the foundation that the church will be built on." You know, he had to fulfill that role. He was caught up in the enthusiasm and his passion that I'm going to follow you to death, Jesus. Well, yeah, he did. But again, he got ahead of himself. He had more work to do. And understand, he had more he had to do. It's all well and good that he was enthusiastic to follow Jesus, but that would have been fast forwarding past the work he had to do. He had to do more things than that. There was more required of him. He was all passionate and enthusiastic and determined in his heart that he was going to follow Jesus even unto death right then at that moment, even though that wasn't a part of God's plan. And he actually had the Son of God telling him, that's not what you're supposed to do right now. But he didn't want to hear it. He was all caught up in his zeal and his passion that this is what he was going to do. And in the end, he wound up, everything played out as the Lord said it would. And he came up short and he wept because he realized that he had come up short. At that moment, when Peter wept, when he realized that just as the Lord had said, look, you're not even, I mean, you're saying you're going to do this, but no, you're going to deny me before this evening's even over. For the sun, because roosters crow, by the way, you know, people always say, you know, have this vision. If you live in the city, you think roosters crow like when the sun comes up, but they start long before the sun comes up, like 2 hours. If you got neighbors that got roosters, or if you got chickens and you got roosters out there, they're going to start crowing like at 4 a.m. Whenever I read this, because I was raised in more of a rural lifestyle. Whenever I read this, I picture that, you know, that rooster's crowing. It's probably about 4 a.m. That'll give you an idea about what time it was. So it was before the sun even came up. Now, Peter, in that moment, there's like no doubt he was feeling really despondent because he had come up short. I can't imagine everything he must have been feeling. You know, he was no doubt really, really down on himself and beating himself up because he had come up short. But as we've already said, he did ultimately do that very thing. He did ultimately follow Jesus unto death. He just got the timing wrong. You see, his zeal, his enthusiasm was all well and good, but he just got ahead of himself. He ran ahead. He thought the Lord wanted him to do this right now, but the Lord didn't want him to do it right now. He had other stuff he was supposed to do. There was a bigger plan at work than what he understood. And he failed not because he lacked enthusiasm, not because he lacked good intentions, not because he lacked the will in the sense that he was willing in that moment when he said, I'll follow you even unto death. I have no doubt in my mind that he really meant what he said. He wasn't just talking a bunch of nonsense. He meant it in that moment. But at the end of the day, he failed because he got ahead of himself. He had these other things lined up, you know, and he was going to need those things down the road. They would serve him well. He had these other things lined up, but he wasn't ready yet. He had other things to do. He had other things to go through. He had other things to witness. Jesus hasn't even been crucified yet, hasn't been resurrected yet. Peter has a lot of work to do after he didn't witness any of that yet. He wasn't ready. He thought he was ready. His enthusiasm and his zeal and his love for the Lord said he was ready, but it wasn't. He got ahead of himself. Now again, ultimately Christ rose from the dead and he reinstates Peter and they go through this whole thing of Jesus asking him, do you love me? And yes, Lord, I love you. And he gives him instructions of what he's supposed to do. Peter, at that point, had to let it go. He had failed. He had been beating himself up, no doubt, in his mind. We all tend to do that. He had been, no doubt, beating himself up over this failure. It's not like he wept at that moment when the rooster crowed and then it was over. I mean, this was not a shallow thing. He was tore up over it. I don't know about y'all. I tend to be that way. And I think probably all of y'all do too. When you really screw something up, you tend to just dwell on it. You know, you tend to really just keep beating yourself up over it and being down and going back over and over. I can imagine Peter was probably in the time between this happened and when he saw Jesus again after he was resurrected. I can't imagine how many times he played that scenario over and over in his mind, because we do that, don't we? When we screw something up and you go back and you're like, I should have said this. And you start imagining it too. He's probably imagining, you know, when that woman came up to him and said, you're one of them. He said, that's right. I am one of them. He probably played that over and over in his mind. We do that when we screw things up. We fail to say things we should have, or we say things we shouldn't have, or whatever. And we realize later it was a mistake, and you go back over and over and you like reboot the scene. Only this is what I really did, but you didn't. I can only imagine how many times Peter played that over and over in his head. That he did something, he did it differently. He did something, and which again would have been a mistake, because it would still be a failure to see, you know, the bigger picture, because he can't, because he's in that moment at that time. We can see it because we have hindsight, but that God had a bigger role for him to do. He had more work for him to do. But he was no doubt beating himself up over it. Now, ultimately, Jesus shows up, you know, says, look, it's time to let this go. This is what you've got to do now. You are indeed going to follow me in being executed. You're going to follow me even unto death. But you got to do these other things first. And ultimately, in this, Jesus instructed him, and what Peter had to do is he had to let it go. He'd been beating himself. He'd been playing this over and over in his mind and thinking how he had failed. Look, there comes a point you got to let it go. Yes, you screwed up. You can't go back and fix that. Peter got ahead of himself. He thought he was further along than what he was in his faith. He wasn't there. He thought he was. In all sincerity, he thought he was. But the reality, the truth, was that he wasn't there. But he did get there. And to get there and to do the things that the Lord had him to do, he had to let that go. If he would have spent the rest of his life hung up on that moment, on that single night, when he failed, when he denied the Lord, if he would have never let that go, he would have never been able to move on and do the things that God actually needed him to do. It's fine. Look, it's good to when we mess things up and when we make mistakes, we need to reflect on that. We need to learn. But when you catch yourself lapsing into beating yourself up over it, and you will, we all do. When you catch yourself to where you're just beating yourself, it comes a point to where you're not even like, you know, reflecting so that next time you don't make that mistake. You're just putting yourself down. You just lapse into, if you do it long enough, you'll fall into self-loathing. Look, that gets you nowhere, because you have to let that go at some point and move on. It's fine to reflect. It's fine to understand. Well, I failed here. How did I fail? Why did I fail? I got ahead of myself. I thought I was ready. Obviously, I wasn't ready. So that means I've got to get back here and work on these fundamentals so that I am ready at some point in time. I've got to get these other things. I failed here. My faith failed here. Why? Well, because obviously I haven't built it up enough. So I got to get back to the basics. Look, I thought I was going to run ahead and do these great things for the Lord. Well, obviously I'm not. I'm not there yet. So I got to get back here and get back on these fundamentals. The point is that at some point, you got to let it go. Again, it's fine to reflect as far as you understand the mistakes you made, why you made them, and any corrective action you can make. But beyond that, after that, you're just beating yourself up. Look, let it go. No, I'm going to go to burst into the song. Let it go. No, I'm not going to do that. But look, really seriously, though, at some point, then you've got to let it go. Once you've reflected, look, you got it. You understand where you failed. Try to do better next time. What can I do to take corrective action so that I'm in better shape in the future? So that perhaps I don't repeat this mistake. I go back and work on these other things. I got to work on whatever part of your faith or whatever that you need to work on. But look, you got to let it go. And again, using Peter, sticking with Peter as our example, he went on and did great things, just as Jesus said. See, Jesus had said, you're going to be the rock setting the church on. Just as Jesus said, tonight, you ain't ready. Y'all are all going to run off from here. Y'all been hanging out with me all this time. Y'all are all going to take off running. And when Jesus had warned them, we already read it, but when he warned them, look, you know, y'all are going to be scattered. He wasn't like being bitter towards them. He said, look, this has got to happen. The word has to be fulfilled. This came from God, and this is going to be demonstrated, because tonight you're all going to be scattered. He wasn't like being resentful towards them. That wouldn't have made any sense. It had to happen. Too often, we get this mindset. And this is what you got to free yourself. We get this mindset that our mistakes are permanent. Now, sometimes, yes, the fallout from the mistakes we make can last a long time. They may even last your whole life, but they're not permanent. You've got to, at some point, you've got to let it go. I always say, you know, always point out that, you know, we have to forgive, and we have to start by forgiving ourselves. You know, it's like we're told in the Bible, you know, love your neighbors yourself. But you see, if you don't love yourself, if you fall into self-loathing, then you can't love anybody else. If you hate yourself because of the mistakes you've made, and you just sit around beat up and you become bitter and you actually begin to hate who you are, to hate yourself, then you can't love anybody else. It's fake. You sit around and go, no, I love these people. I love all of these. No, you don't, because you don't even like yourself. If you hate yourself, you can't love other people. You've got to let it go. You can't just sit around and keep beating yourself up. It's time to get up. The Lord has stuff for you to do. I don't know what it is. You don't even know what it is. And when you do it, you may not even know that you did it. That's just how life is. But if you've learned the lesson, you've reflected, you realize you made a mistake, and you take whatever corrective action you believe you can take, then it's time to move on. It's time to let it go. It's time to pick yourself up and start getting back to the work that the Lord has for you to do. It does no good to just keep dwelling on the mistakes. Peter made a huge mistake. Whether it's intentional or not, he made a huge mistake. And in this, he sinned. He did. I mean, it's not like, you know, it wasn't a big deal to the Lord. The Lord knew what he was going to do, and he had to repent of that. And he did repent. He spoke again and again to the Lord. Yes, I love you. And the Lord said, okay, then this is what you've got to do. And you know what? He went forward, and he demonstrated his faith by taking the action that was necessary. And he did. He fulfilled what the Lord had to do in the correct time that the Lord gave him to do it. And guess what? In the end, he did follow Jesus, even to being executed. It was just at a different point in time. Understand? Learn from your mistakes, and once you do, once you reflect and you've taken away, okay, this is what I need to try to do better. Look, let it go, because you're not going to go back and refix it. You're not going to replay it in your mind and turn it into something else. Let it go. You ain't the first one. You ain't going to be the last one to screw something up. You keep going. You keep moving forward. That's what you got to do. We have a wrap up on that. Now, hopefully you got something out of it. I always say that every week. Hopefully you got something out of it. Really, we've got to be able to keep moving forward. You know, you've got to let your mistakes go, because the more you dwell on them, the bigger they become. I mean, seriously, the bigger they become, and they become bigger than what they actually are in your mind. And they'll become an anchor that weighs you down. You're trying to tread water. You're trying to swim to the shore, and you've got this thing tied, you know, tied to your leg, holding you back. And you're the one that's got the ability to let it go so that you can get where you need to be. Don't let yourself get tied down by your mistakes. Learn from them. Understand. Do what you can to take corrective action, no matter how many times you got to do that. And most of all, keep moving forward. We're going to move on out of here. Again, thank you for tuning in. I'm always appreciative that y'all tune in every week. And once again, thank you for those of you. Drop something in the plate. It is very much appreciated. We'll be back on Friday for the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. So be sure and catch that. It's always a fun show. And always a good time, good discussion. And, of course, we plan to be back here on Tuesday for the Parish of the Patriots.